This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9.
Freshly dug Joycast.
Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Freshly dug on Joy 94.9.
I got those needleman blues making me sad. I got those
fades out rather strangely there, doesn't it? That was the Communards and Bronski Beat, Need a Man Blues. And it's the first choice of music by my special guest on Digging Deeper today, Nicholas Penny. Welcome to the studio, Nicholas.
Thanks, Doug.
Now, why that particular piece of music? What does that mean to you?
Well, did you hear what it said? Need a Man Blues? It was a time in my life when I guess I was coming out of marriage, trying to sort through all that stuff, trying to sort out what, who and what I was, and realising that I needed a man, and I had the blues about it.
That's a particularly nice track expressing that. Now, let's start with talking about your life generally. You were born in the small town of Yay in Victoria.
That's right.
Back in 1954.
I was hoping you weren't going to say that bit.
Shortly after I was born in the UK. Well, a few years after I was born in the UK, so, you know.
Oh, that's all right. That means you're older.
Yes.
Yep.
So you're safe on that one. And from there, you had some fairly remarkable experiences. Now, the reason for asking you to come on the show today was to look back at that time when you were born and when you were at school and what happened to you in that era and how that's affected the rest of your life. Because, you know, people think that it's all kind of a bit easy nowadays to be gay, but it certainly wasn't in those days, and you didn't have a particularly good time of it. So
I think that's reasonable to say.
I'm British. I'm allowed to understate. let's get to the to that part a little bit later. Let's begin and give people a bit of a background. What sort of a family were you born into?
Well, simply put, Mum had come out from London soon after the war and married someone in Australia that I think was a family friend of theirs, and she got divorced. And getting divorced, she was considered very much a black woman, and you know, shouldn't have been available to anybody because she'd been divorced. So,
yeah, because again, people don't understand that back in the 50s, being divorced was a very major social stigma, wasn't it?
And people did nowadays, it's just basically a dot and a signature, and it's all over and done with. But back then, it was almost a death sentence.
Well, social death, certainly.
Yeah, social death, certainly. She was high Anglican, I think, when she first came here, so there was a lot of religious intent there as well. The family was, when she got together with Dad, was pretty well disowned by all his relatives, and of course she had no relatives in Australia. So we moved out into they moved out into the Yay area, which was sort of out in the country. Maybe the first round of hippies, I don't know.
Yeah, because you lived in a bus.
Yes, we lived in a bus after things sort of got going. I don't know what age I would have been. Probably in those early first 2 years, Dad bought a bus from the Geelong Bus Company, of all places, and built it into a mobile home. It's like a combustion stove and, you know, sink and hot water and fridge. And
sounds terribly hippie.
Oh, it does.
Living out in the country and going out shooting rabbits.
We did, actually. Yeah. That's how he fed us for a long time.
Yeah.
Shot rabbits and cut wood for little old ladies to get some food and all this sort of stuff. So
But what was his profession eventually?
Well, he did a bit of drawing or something through tech, I think, but eventually he became a builder for a company called Jennings, which I think is still around.
AV Jennings and Co.
I'm not sure they were called that then, but they contracted to the government to build schools. So he was given assignments literally around the state. So for around 6 years, I guess, we lived very much as gypsies, going from town to town as he built a school. And once that one was finished, we moved on to the next site. So we covered a lot of Victoria in those years.
So you saw a lot of country, Victoria, when
we certainly
you were a
did,
kid.
Yeah.
During that time, would you say you had a happy childhood at that point?
No.
No?
Is that a simple answer?
Well, yes, it is. I mean, it's very straightforward. And, you know, some people take to the gypsy existence and enjoy moving from place to place. Others kind of crave a bit of stability and would like to have been in one place.
I don't think that was the problem, the gypsy side of it. I think that was quite enjoyable from a child's point of view. But the family dynamic was quite difficult because, obviously, I was something a bit different to what they intended as a son, or hoped for as a son, maybe because I was playing with the flowers and, you know, baking cakes and those sorts of things. Weren't quite, you know, chasing the football around the football field.
So there were early intimations, shall we say.
Yeah, I think there might have been.
So did that affect your relationship more with your mother or your father, do you think? I mean, fathers often have a bit more difficulty coping with that than mothers do, don't they?
Yeah,
But from the sound of your mother, you know, she sounds to have been a little bit on the strict side, despite her divorce.
Well, she was very, very, can I say, Victorian, and I'm sure you understand what I mean by that. Very stiff upper lip and non-showing of emotion, certainly non-demonstrative. And Dad was, I think because he was just so busy, he was, you know, very much on the outer. He was the punishment provider.
Yes. And was the family, because you travelled around so much, the family wasn't really sort of plugged into any social networks of any kind?
No, that's right. I guess some towns we lived in, for instance, Dalesford, my brother was born there. My folks got quite involved with a guy that was the head of the music department at the university there. So there was a fair social thing built around that, but it was only one or two acquaintances, really. It wasn't like, you know, living in a town like where they live now, or where Dad still lives.
And that sort of tends to magnify problems within the family, doesn't it, when you cut off from a wider society.
Yeah.
So it wasn't entirely a happy time then. Now, how long did that sort of travelling stage continue for?
Until I was about six, I think, which was, I guess, around the 1960. 61, 62, something like that. And I don't know whether the folks just got totally sick of the gypsy lifestyle or what it was, but Dad got a job with what's called SEC back then, up at Bogong, which is a little village just below False Creek in the Snow Country.
Now, you say that one of your main memories from there was that you were molested as a child.
Yeah. It took a long time for that to actually surface in a clear recollection, I guess. It was something I attempted to block out for many years.
As people do. And do you reckon that had an impact on you later on? I mean, you sound as though, looking back, you recognise that you were probably gay from an early age, so
I think I can say that now.
Yes.
But I certainly couldn't back in those years. No. And I guess I got to a point where I realised the molestation and recalled it, and I thought, oh, great, I finally found what's caused all this, so as soon as I can get better from that, I won't be gay or have, you know, gay intent. Which didn't work.
No, it doesn't, does it?
It seemed to actually clear it all and allow me to be freer with my gay side, if you like.
Because this is one of the things that the so-called reparative therapy people who want to pray you straight are always going on about. They say, it's all because you. That's why I got this job. It's all because you were molested when you were a child, probably by a relative or somebody a great deal older. And if only you can get past that, you'll be straight again. That's not what you found.
Far from it. Far from it.
So it allowed you to sort of recognise that it happened, accept it that it had happened, and as you say, it cleared you to be gay, in a sense.
Well, that's probably a strange sort of way to say it, but that encapsulates the thought, yeah.
So in a sense, it was sitting there like a blockage.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a very interesting statement, that. I've never thought of it working in that way, but I guess if there was perhaps some fear related around all that, the fear of acknowledging it, was partly fear of acknowledging yourself, it would put a kind of stop to your emotional development. I've never really thought about it like that before.
Well, one of the things, I've had considerable amount of counselling to get through just the molestation subject itself, and one of the things I can remember saying to a particular counsellor was that all I really want is to have my responsibility back for me.
Yes.
And he couldn't understand that. And he said, well, you know, of course you're responsible for you. You chose that shirt to put on, you chose those shoes. Of course you're responsible. And I said, no, my responsibility for me, deep inside.
Mm-hmm.
And he went away and did a bit of study and talked to some colleagues, I guess, and came back a week or two later and actually apologised and said, now I get what you're talking about. Because it did block so much of my ability to grow, I suppose, as a person. I have no idea, no recollection of exactly what the perpetrator may have said, what sort of threats he made, but I know I carried for so many years the incredible fear of this being discovered or of me being found out, this constant feeling of what if I get found out, which was mostly about the molestation, but I guess in later years became more about, oh, I like boys and I want to play with boys. What if I get found out? So, if you like, compounded.
Yeah. Well, this seems kind of like an appropriate moment to bring in your next music track, which is Judy Collins, I've looked at life from both sides now.
Thank you, yeah.
I think I can see from what we've just been talking about why you might have chosen that. You obviously pay attention to the lyrics of this song.
Yeah, well, even the thought of it, it almost brings me to tears because there was a really dramatic part of my, I guess you'd say, coming out, where this notion of I've looked at both sides now, so how do I choose? Is there a choice in this, or is there no choice? I've just got to be who I am.
Well, okay, Judy Collins, I looked at life from both sides now.
Goes and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air. I've looked at life from both sides now, from give and take and steal somehow. It's life's illusions I recall.
Joy 94.9.
Freshly dug Joycast.
Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod and Apple accessory store in Australia.
You're listening to Freshly Dug on Joy 94.9. My name's Doug Pollard and I'm talking this hour with Nicholas Penny, who was the winner of the Joy Radiothon and who has a most remarkable story to tell us. Now, we've just been speaking about his very early life and about how he was molested at the age of six and how he eventually got past that. But I want to step back in time again and talk about what in a way has been, like, I suppose it's fair to say, a kind of defining event, the defining event in your life, which was when you were bashed when you were at high school.
Yeah, that's a...
Now, you'd obviously...
Careful way to say it, actually.
But, I mean, it has obviously... It's what sort of year would this be? I mean, this is quite some time ago, isn't it?
Yeah, I tried to pinpoint that in my memory. I think it was somewhere around 68, 70, somewhere in that time frame. I think I was about 14 years of age.
Yeah, that would be about right if that's the age you were. And you went to high school. Now, up until you got to high school, you said you were quite comfortable, in a sense, with your sexuality. You'd been playing around with other boys and
because
so forth.
I don't know whether it was because of the molestation or because it was me, but, yeah, sure, there was some amount of playing with boys. I actually had a boyfriend, you might call him, through the whole of primary school, and we used to go off and do all sorts of things out in the bush. And
there's a lot to be said for living out in the bush, isn't there? But you said when you got to high school, you became, and I'm quoting from what you wrote earlier on, you became frighteningly aware that this behaviour was, in inverted commas, wrong and bad.
Yeah.
And you went to amazing lengths to, as you put it, stop being a puff. What do you mean by that?
Do I amazing lengths?
No, but I mean, what
amazing? Yeah,
no, I mean, what amazing lengths did you go to? You were trying to hide your sexual orientation.
Yeah, everything. I mean, the anxiety levels, the fear levels of being found out, as I mentioned to you earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of specific things, but just always sort of being on the hide, hiding from people, not wanting to engage. Just totally scared all the time of being found out, and then, you know, being called sissy, being called poof, those sorts of things, by school teachers, by fellow students.
By school teachers?
Yeah.
So obviously your efforts to sort of hide were not terribly successful.
Oh, I thought I did a good job, but I guess I didn't.
Yeah, it's really strange. It parallels my own experience where I didn't even know I was gay. It was other people who told me.
Yeah.
And I discovered much later that everybody at school assumed I was, even though I wasn't at that stage, not actively
I think that's similar for myself, that I think I was around that 14, 15 when this friend that I'd had through primary school came back from, shall I say, Scots College down in Melbourne here, where he'd come to school, and was telling me all the games that used to happen down there between boys. And I can remember just doing this absolute, like, freak out inside myself and shutting it all down and saying, there's no way, I can't go near that, because that really is being a poof. And I just so didn't want to be that.
You didn't want to be that?
No.
You wanted to fit in other words?
Yeah.
Obviously not, because you ended up getting bashed very badly.
Well, yeah, quite badly. And obviously, schoolmates, peers knew the difference, however they perceived that or whatever that meant to them. And as I said earlier, I was consistently called poof. Even my dad used to call me a sissy and a wounded chook. So it was coming from all fronts.
Right. Now, do you mind talking about what actually happened to you in this assault?
I'll do my best, but there's still a few buttons in there that sometimes get a bit emotional.
Understood.
Hmm.
Now, you said you were bashed in the schoolyard by some fellow students, and that's being bashed, okay, you get thumped.
Hmm.
But this actually ended up much more nasty than that. You were actually picked up and physically thrown over a high bank, a three-metre bank.
That's right.
Can you talk about the damage that did?
Sorry.
That's okay.
A breath of air to come in. Well, initially I had a twisted or a strangulated testicle.
Right.
I was also... there was a stab in the side of my head that just missed my temple by about 3 or 4 mil, which was just a piece of a bush or something that had been brush hooked by local council.
And I got
concussion.
Yeah. So you were rushed off to hospital.
Well, no, not from there. I actually crawled through the fence and walked home, which was only maybe 200-300 metres away. And, of course, I got into so much trouble because I left the school ground without permission, even though I was concussed and had no idea whether I was walking on my feet or on my hands.
So you didn't get medical attention straight away?
Oh, no. No.
Did your family not insist on it?
No, they were hardly even aware, I think, of the bashing, because I just hit it the best I could. And I went on for about 4 or 5 days with this testicle that suddenly became the size of around about a tennis ball and about the colour of the black of these microphones in here.
Yes.
And I eventually had to talk to them about it, and they freaked out and rushed me off to hospital, and I was in surgery in about 2 hours because it was close to gangrene and became a life threat.
Yes. Now, what you didn't know at the time was that there were other injuries.
Yeah, unfortunately, the other injuries didn't come out for a number of years.
Can you think why they weren't diagnosed at the time? Was that because you didn't talk much about what happened to you?
Well, I'm getting quite emotional now. Yeah, I couldn't talk about it. I was just in a lockdown state. I was just so crippled inside myself because of what had happened, the way I was treated by both the teaching body at the school and the student body at the school. It was as though I was totally to blame for some incredible indiscretion that had happened in the school ground.
Yes, because what you wrote when you wrote to me about this was, you said, there was hell to pay at the hands of both teaching staff and pupils who held me accountable for the complications the incident caused throughout the school. So you were the victim, but you were basically...
In a double sense. sense, maybe.
Yeah, but you were the victim of this bashing, but because it brought trouble to the school... it was your fault.
Precisely.
For being bashed. Mm. So there was no action taken against the people who bashed you? No,
well, a little bit inside the school, but there was no police involvement or anything like that, which there would be in today's world.
Yeah, because that was a fairly serious assault by the sounds of things.
Well, it went on to show was that my spine was broken. And my lower back is actually fractured. I sit here with still a broken back.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, as I told you just before, I won this prize from Joy, which has been an absolute godsend. I was in hospital having surgery to my neck, where they fused 3 vertebrae in my neck because of the resultant damage from that bashing. And I'm now...
And this is how many years later? This is 30-odd, 40-odd years later?
Close to 40, I guess.
Close to 40 years later. So You must have known something was wrong before. I mean, you must have suffered some pain over the years.
I've been in constant pain, I guess, since about the age of 18. And through that period, all those years, I've sought all sorts of treatment from the more... one particular specialist I see calls it the witch doctor element, seeing people like acupuncturists and chiropractors and those sorts of treatments. But the main general profession has never really been able to give a clear diagnosis of what the problem was. It wasn't until 1996 that occurred.
And Again, is this because you yourself didn't tell them about the bashing still, or because you had suppressed that? Didn't make a connection between the pain and the bashing?
Excuse me, I don't think I ever really made a connection between my back problem and the bashing at that point.
Right.
It just seemed like that's the way it was. I was doing some very heavy physical work on building sites, which seems to...
So it was sometime after the bashing that the back problem started showing up then?
Oh, probably about 4 years, I guess.
Right, so you wouldn't necessarily have made a connection?
Not at that point, no.
No.
I mean, I had a lot of pain, but I didn't... I just thought it was aches and pains.
And when you're doing a heavy physical job and so on and so forth, yeah.
Mm.
Yes, amazing to be sort of...
Well, it got to the point when I was doing that heavy physical work. I came in from... This was up in Falls Creek, and I was working on the building sites in summer.
Mm.
We'd poured heavens knows how many trucks of concrete that day, and I'd wheeled, I don't know how many barrows of concrete. We didn't use pumps in those days.
No.
And I came back into the unit we were living in and sat down and ate a meal, and I went to move, and I simply couldn't. I was paralysed from the waist down. And that was the first really severe bout of back problem. And even at that point, there was no real diagnosis made. I was just given some knockout pills, I guess, and drugged up for 3 or 4 days until all the symptoms subsided and I could start to move again.
Yeah. Now, it was in the midst of all this that you met the woman who became your wife.
Yeah, well, she was...
We'll talk about that in a moment. We'll take a little break, let you and the listeners and myself get their breath back a little bit. Your next track is from, the Dyke's favourite friend, Susie Quattro with Devil Got
Drive. Not just the Dyke's favourite friend.
Well, no.
I quite like it.
I'm just being provocative.
I gathered.
What is this date from? Does this have a particular connection for you?
Well, right where we are, actually. It was Falls Creek, and she was in the tops of the charts, and The Man, I think, was the main nightclub up there at the time, and she played profusely through that, along with people like Gary Glitter and that sort of era.
Mm-hmm.
But she always has a place in my mind.
Well, I'm glad you picked her rather than Gary Glitter. Susie Quattro with Devil Gate Drive.
Hey, y'all want to go down to Devil Gate Drive?
Yeah!
Welcome to the dive.
Come on, boys. Let's do it one more time for Susie.
Joy 94.9.
Freshly dug Joycast.
Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod, and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
I'm Doug Pollard. This hour we're digging deeper with my special guest today, Nicholas Penny. Now, here's a message from Brad. He's SMS'd in. He said, touching to hear from your guest today. It demonstrates how far we've come, and unfortunately it reminds me of many things growing up in the bush myself. Now, before we went to that track, we talked about the way that Nicholas was bashed at school and how it took an awful long time for all the physical effects of that to show, and how he collapsed one day on a building site where he was working, paralysed from the waist down. He didn't find out until much later, of course, that his spine had been damaged in this bashing. And he didn't really get very much treatment for it at that time, just painkillers and get back on your feet and get on with the job.
Yeah.
But it was during this period that you met a woman who eventually became your wife.
Yeah, I hope she doesn't mind me saying her name, but Lisa and I met up there. In fact, I was kind of chasing her sister a bit at the time in the hope, but...
As one does.
It ended up working better between Lisa and I, and we became quite close quite quickly. We lived together up in the Falls Creek area for some time, around the 2 years, 1.5 years, something like that. And her folks then moved up to northern New South Wales and bought land up in the hippie area right behind Nimbin.
Mm-hmm.
And this was about 19, I think I was, and I just thought, oh, well, that's the end of that. Let's move out of here. And that was a good chance to get away from home. So I packed a few things in the car and said, see you later. And I never went back.
So that was physically leaving an area, but was that also, in your mind, leaving the gay stuff behind?
I think there was a hope of that. In fact, I did that a few times through the married years where we moved to another location. I thought, that's great, I'll be able to start again. I won't go near that stuff anymore. I'll leave it all behind.
But you obviously had a reasonably successful marriage for a while because you had 4 children.
Yeah. I'm actually a granddad now too. Which is pretty exciting.
Which is pretty good going. Are you still on good terms with your wife, if you don't mind my asking?
Yeah, I think I can say I am. We often, like, for instance, through this surgery stuff, she was one of the people that was quite concerted in getting a message to me to say, hope it all goes well, and we're often in contact over our children, and especially over the grandson now. We've even had competitions to see who could get how many guys in a month sort of thing, but she unfortunately won that one. But
Now, you mention here also that you got involved with various religious groups and did a great deal of Bible study. Was this also related to, managing your homosexuality?
Well, I was praying to God to take it away, so it wouldn't happen, and I'm sure that if I got to know God well enough, or Jesus, or whoever it's supposed to be, that, it'd all disappear and I'd be whole or healthy or... Because back in those years, it was classed as a mental illness, and as I'm sure you're well aware, it was an imprisonable offence.
Yes.
Which many younger people, I'm astounded to hear, don't really even believe.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? We were illegal. It was illegal to be gay, or at least to act on your gay impulses. And just when they decided we probably weren't criminal,
we decided we were mad
instead. And then we had all those horrible things like aversion therapy and so on to get through over those years.
I actually got baptised in the Seventh-day Adventist Church, of all things, would you believe?
Is that one of the ones where they duck you under completely?
Oh, yeah, there's a big, it's like a platform in the middle of the church, and you go up there and the pastor gets in and sticks you in. And it was reasonably warm, but when I came out, I said to him, hey, we forgot the soap, and he wasn't very impressed, actually.
I have a feeling you weren't entirely serious at that point.
Oh, no, I was. I was deadly serious. I spent many hours Bible studying with various religious groups.
And in those days, they wouldn't have had this so-called reparative therapy they have nowadays, so you didn't have anyone trying to pray it away for you.
Well, I wasn't open about it at all, so
right.
Nobody knew that that's what my inner feelings were or my inner intent was at that point.
But you couldn't help recapitulating yourself, could you, in many different ways, because you actually end up living in a bus again.
Yes, we bought a bus. I think while we had two children or three children, we lived in that bus for some time while we went down to the Seventh-day Adventist College behind Newcastle, and I studied building there, and I guess taking on after that again, we lived in a bus and I became a builder. How about that? And
the seed does not fall far from the tree, as they say.
No, but through the building stuff, the back just got worse and worse and worse. And then the building industry turned down, and we moved back up to the Nimbin area, lived as hippie sort of people, I suppose. I bought a little business in the automotive trade.
Through all this, you say your desire for men never went away. Were you acting on it as well?
No, I wasn't at that time.
Right.
Not long before the marriage, there was an incident with a guy. In fact, he was my very first job was with local council, and he was one of the truck drivers with local council. Mm-hmm. And I used to wear tight footy shorts in those years. And for some reason, it seemed to tease him, and he made numerous lurid advances towards me, which I couldn't contend with. But one year after this was just before I met my former wife, or a year or two, after the Christmas break, we'd had one or two more beers maybe than we should have, and we sort of ended up out in the bush somewhere, and let's say it's history now, but
yeah, things happen.
But from that point on, it wasn't probably until I was about 36, somewhere in that age, that I deliberately set out to experiment, shall we say.
Yeah, because you mentioned that night school offered interesting opportunities late at night around town.
I went and
around the Lismore Nimbin area.
Yeah, I went and did further studies after my initial apprenticeship, and so I became...
You mean if you did further studies at night around the beats of Lismore?
No. I was studying building, but I suppose the beat was an interesting building, but it was really just an outhouse, I suppose. But it was near the town hall, and that was an interesting building. So I suppose I could put it down to that, maybe.
Yeah, all right. So you killed two birds with one stone.
That's
in
right.
In other words,
right. And that sort of opened my awareness, I guess, towards what I was really feeling. And when I can remember the first incident that occurred in a deliberate sense, where I was, shall I say, pleasured by another guy, it just blew my mind. It really did. That that connection could be there with another man, and that it was something that had been missing in my life for such a long time.
Yeah, because you were still doing all this counselling and that to try and get rid of these desires. All this prayer, all this counselling, marriage, everything else, don't work, does it?
Unfortunately not.
And this is
fortunately, maybe.
This is something too that I think our generation experienced that subsequent generations have had less of. People say, you know, you choose to be gay.
What a stupid statement!
And you know, we know that we did all we could.
I did everything to choose to be straight. And,
exactly.
And people laugh in my face nowadays that when I say that sort of thing, because I can't begin to understand what that means.
No.
Because fortunately, I guess, as that message said earlier, that our community has grown so much, not just the gay community, but the whole community has grown so much that we're far more able to accept the differences.
Yes, I mean, it's such a different world, and as you say, trying to explain that to younger people now...
Yeah, lost for words.
It is a whole
I run workshops sometimes, and one I ran not very long back, I had maybe 30 guys there, and there were people from about the age of 14 through to the age of 72, all men, and as far as I'm aware, they were all gay men.
Yeah.
And, you know, the middle age group, say the 25-30s, were having a bit of a party and talking about all the things that age group do.
Mm.
And then this older bloke, the 72-year-old, talked about his relationship with a man through the war years and how incredibly hard it was and the fear that they had of being caught and the threat of imprisonment, bashings and all that sort of stuff. And one of the younger guys that was around that 14, 15 years of age just was so dumbfounded to hear the incredible oppression that people a few generations before had experienced.
Yep. I mean, we need to acknowledge that a lot of work has been done.
An enormous amount of work.
And it has borne fruit and is still continuing
can we plug Joy here?
To bear fruit.
Is this a good place to plug Joy?
You can if you wish.
Well, you know, what an incredible thing it is to have a station like this that, I mean, I've been listening to Joy since probably, when did it start? Early 90s, something like that?
At least.
Yeah, and it's probably about that 15 years ago that you were down in South Yarra somewhere on Chapel Street. But the amount of work that this station has done through the various people that come on air, various people like me, I guess, that have come in and talked about situations, and the incredible awareness and growth that's promoted within the gay community as such, but the community at large.
Yeah, the great thing about radio, as I always like to say, is it's a personal thing. You're talking to people one-on-one when you're talking on the radio.
Mm.
And, I'm just told we're having our 16th birthday on World AIDS Day in December.
Oh, wow.
The station's having
16 years. How about that?
Sweet 16. Oh, I wish I was. Sweet 16th birthday.
And never been kissed. You forgot that bit.
I couldn't lie.
Right.
16th birthday coming up on World AIDS Day for the station. We will be having some celebrations for that, I understand. Cake's always welcome. Well, look, I think it's time we took another little break at this point. Now, Neil Young, Pocahontas. I have to confess I'm allergic to Neil Young's voice.
A lot of people are, it seems. It was very much the hippie era.
Wasn't it just?
When we were up around Nimbin, all the people that we knew, you would often go somewhere. We bought a couple of his albums, and it was something that was playing a lot, so it reminds me of that period of my life a lot.
Yeah, the only Neil Young album I own, I was sent for review many years ago when I was a journalist. I've never actually bought one. But anyway, here's Neil Young, Pocahontas.
Thank you.
Aurora Borealis, the icy sky at night, paddles cut the water, Marlon Brando, Pocahontas and me. Pocahontas.
Joy 94.9.
Freshly dug Joycast.
Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod and Apple accessory store in Australia.
mymac.com.au.
And this is Doug Pollard. My special guest this hour on Digging Deeper is Nicholas Penny, who's had, shall we say, somewhat of an eventful and not altogether pleasant set of life experiences, but we'll get to the better bits in a moment. The got an SMS in here. Great discussion. As a young gay man who walks down the street with his arms around his boyfriend, it's humbling to be reminded how much work has been done in the past for gay men. And he says, thanks to Joy. Well, that's why we're here, and that's particularly why I wanted to ask Nicholas to come in today and tell us his story, to remind people that it wasn't always the way it is today. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't have a huge amount of time left, and a lot happened after where we left you.
We've only touched a little bit, haven't we?
We've only touched a little bit. It's amazing how the hour goes. Mm. But let's just say that your wife found out that mm-hmm. you were seeing another
man. She steamed open a letter, would you believe? She said she'll never do that ever again.
Okay, and that was like the beginning of a bit of a collapse in your life, shall we say, because you ended up getting divorced, you ended up losing your job, you ended up being a bit of a drifter for a while, and you ended up in a mental hospital.
Yeah, I totally burnt out, you might say, blew all the fuses. I couldn't really walk, I couldn't feed myself, I couldn't even talk. I could have this conversation in my mind where I'd be sitting opposite someone like this and say, I know I can say more than one word here, that somehow I can connect these words to make a sentence, but my mind had blown to such a point that I couldn't converse.
Now, you contemplated suicide at that stage, didn't you?
I sat there with a shotgun, my grandfather's old Hollis, actually, fully loaded, held up between my legs, pointed at my head. Somehow I lost the strength and it fell to the ground and I couldn't pick it up. So don't ask me how that happened, but it did.
I think your subconscious was telling you this was not a good idea.
It seems that way.
I think, and it definitely wasn't.
But the pain and suffering hasn't really ended since then.
But that was like kind of, I suppose, a watershed, though, wasn't it, in many respects? Because that's at the point at which you told your father you were gay.
Yeah, well, fortunately, with, I guess, the safety and security of being in that hospital, I took him around to this little building that was being done, knowing his interest in that. And while I was alone with him at that point, I said, I've got to tell you something, and I'm gay. And I expected the world to open up and swallow me, and that would be the end of everything. But he put his arm on my shoulder, and he said, look, I don't know much about this. What can I do to help? How can I support you?
Which must have meant a great deal to you.
I can't speak about it.
No. Of course. Now, since the 1980s, you said you've had considerable involvement with men's groups, and you're still involved with men's groups. You're participating in these. And has that been a help to you?
Oh, definitely. And not just to me, but also the men that have been involved. When the first inaugural National Men's Festival occurred in Sydney, that would be about close to 20 years ago now, I suppose. My son and I went to that. He was only about 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. And we went to the next 10 of those events. Numerous men from numerous backgrounds, straight, gay, otherwise, pedophiles and all. And it was an incredible growth cycle. In fact, it was in one of those that I had a very clear recollection when the pedophiles were trying to push their case, that I had a very clear recall of the abuse that I'd gone through. Mm. So it was an incredibly safe place for me to feel that and to begin to grow.
Now, you've moved on to the other side of the counter, so to speak, on that. You now have qualifications in counselling.
Yes, I'm a qualified counsellor, and I'm a qualified... I have a master's, in fact, in clinical hypnotherapy and a master's in NLP and numerous other bits and pieces.
NLP?
Neuro-linguistic programming, which is, I guess, an offshoot of hypnosis, you might say, under the Milton Erickson line.
Can you just explain a little bit about what NLP is?
It's neuro-linguistic programming. Neuro meaning of the mind, linguistic meaning the languages we, I guess the internal languages we use, and the programming mean how we put all that together to program our own life.
Ah, well, that sounds like something to do with the power of words and the story we tell ourselves.
That's a fair bit to do with it, yeah.
Yes.
Listening to people's language and supporting people to change their model of the world and move on into something that they might choose as something better.
Now, you... I almost don't want to say this, but...
Which part are you up to now?
Well, you know, you went through a couple of relationships and then you came across what you call a special man.
Audi.
Yeah, and you said you had a few years together and he ended up being murdered in 96. That, after everything else...
It's probably one of the most powerful experiences I've physically been through. He... How can I briefly explain it? We'd been together for that amount of time. We'd had about 6 weeks in Thailand together, and we were due to come back. He wanted to stay. I came back to start up new jobs and houses and all that sort of stuff. We'd been talking from... He was in Nepal at that stage, a couple hundred bucks a month on phone calls, all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I was supposed to fly out on my birthday of 96 to rejoin and stay over there, and it was on that day his brother rang me and he said, "I suppose you know he's dead." And that was what I got. And literally, I was leaning over a desk. I'm not exaggerating when I say this. I've never experienced anything like this before. But it was as though a steam train or something came down that phone, hit me, threw me through the air for about 2 metres, and I landed on a desk behind me.
Mm.
It was just...
Quite literally poleaxed.
Yeah. It was just unbelievable, the shock value of that. And it took me about 2 or 3 days before I could even stand up.
after everything else, to have that happen was just...
I'm wearing his bracelet, though. Look, see?
Yes.
He had that made in Thailand, one of his earlier trips.
Well, but you came out of that as well. And
yeah,
you had a relationship that lasted nearly 10 years.
Close to 10 years.
Which is quite an achievement. That's a lifetime in gay years, isn't it?
I guess it is, but I felt it was just beginning, really. And unfortunately, the partner decided he didn't want that sort of thing and wanted freedom to live his life in another way, so we concluded.
Yeah. And it was in the latter part of 96, and you were with your partner at that stage, and that's when you finally found out you'd got a broken back.
Yeah.
And this had happened during that bashing incident at high school. All that pain and disability you had, you had the break in the neck and the break in the lower back.
Yeah, well, it was just damage in my neck, and it caused what's called stenosis, where the bones attempt to heal themselves, but they grow incorrectly, and they put a lot of pressure on the spinal cord.
They grow over the nerve, don't they, and they put pressure on. Yeah, I know
so
about that one.
I was getting close to... Well, I was having a great deal of trouble using my arms, and they said the possibility of becoming quadriplegic was becoming way too great.
And that's when you started getting treatment for these things.
Yeah, so I had...
And finally...
It took nearly 18 months finally to get through surgery, I think, but I had the first round of surgery on my birthday of this year.
Yep.
And someone said life begins at 40, but maybe it starts at 55 because that's how old I was.
And it was while you were recovering from that you found out you'd won a holiday in the radio fund.
I was out of hospital and a mate from down the street was helping me walk my dogs because I couldn't lead them, and I was hobbling along beside him. The phone went and I said, "Guess what?" And I said, "What?" And Bridget, as she is, just strang it out. And,
yes.
You know, I thought, "Oh, what are they calling me because I won a CD for? Heavens above, you know."
Yeah.
"Oh, no, wait a minute, that's just right. I think they said they had an iPod. Maybe I've won the iPod."
Yeah.
"But why has she taken so long to tell me?" Eventually she said, "Guess what, you've won." And I just about fell through the floor. So the first thing I did was get on the phone to the young fellow that had helped me out looking after the dogs while I was going through all that surgery stuff and said, "Are you coming to LA?" And he sort of said, "What on earth are you talking about?" So what a great way to say thanks.
Well,
to Joy.
couldn't have happened to a nicer man.
Well, thank you.
It couldn't have happened to a nicer man, and congratulations on coming through that surgery. You're planning on going to LOA before you do the next surgery, if you can get the money together.
Well, that's it, getting money together. I'm probably, as you can tell through all of that, it's been an incredible drain on funds, and I don't really have any anymore.
No, and you're out of work at the moment?
Fortunately, I get a little bit of part-time work, and I manage to see a few clients a week.
Right.
But really, that's just living money, so being able to get any extra funds on top of that.
Do you think that'll improve once you've had the second surgery, once you're through all that?
It's a really unknown quantity, Doug. I mean, we've got fingers crossed. If it's as good as what this first round of surgery is, it's given me the use of my arms back. I've got good feeling and dexterity within my hands. I've lost a lot of the pain. My mind is a lot clearer than it used to be, so it's given me great results. So if I get half of that with the improvement with the lower spine surgery, it'll be a different world.
I'm sure everybody listening is going to wish you the very best for the future.
Thank you.
That you do come through that fine, and thank you very much for sharing your story with us today.
Not a problem.
Been a very emotional hour, which it's not often is on this hour. And good on you for having the bravery to come in and speak so honestly.
Thank you. I don't see it as bravery because it's a true story. It's my story and something I've lived through. And I hope it just puts a little bit of an impact out there into our community, but into the community at large, to, I guess, just demonstrate that the simplest of things that might have occurred in early years can have such an incredible ramification.
Indeed. And thank you very much for your time today, Nicholas.
Most welcome.
Nicholas Penny.
Thank you.
We'll go out with your final choice of music, which is Phil Collins, In the Air Tonight. Feel it in the air tonight. We certainly felt it in the air this morning, didn't we? A very emotional hour there with a very brave man who's gone through some quite tough times, and hopefully things are now coming good for him. That was Nicholas Penny, and thanks very much to Nicholas for coming in and sharing his story with us today.
Joy 94.9.
Freshly dug Joycast.
Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod, and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.